Evening, everyone. Just good to see you all here. Glad you could come, and hope this can be a help to each of you, whether it's you might be dealing with anxiety yourself or whether you might be want to help someone that you know that has it. But as we looked at last week, it is something where it's really the most common mental illness that people have in Canada or around the world. And but thankfully, it's actually the one that's, of the different ones that we recognize, it's probably one of the most treatable, and so we can learn different things from that, and that's what we're going to be looking at tonight, practical strategies for overcoming anxiety. And so as we begin, and we looked at last week, there's many contributing factors to our struggles with anxiety that... Yes, it has to do with our emotions, with our thinking, but there's also physical aspects, social aspects. And so we want to recognize that, and so there's various initial steps that we can take that can make the symptoms of our anxiety more manageable. And so when we're having trouble, different things that we either can put into our life or take out can make a difference in that respect. So first off, talking to a doctor, that sometimes, as we looked at, there can be some physical things that may be contributing to it. If our thyroid isn't functioning as it should, that can be a problem. Sometimes it could be a vitamin deficiency. And that isn't like that's the cause, but it is a contributing factor. And so asking about that. And then sometimes when we're at a point where we're in a bad position, there is medication that can help us. Of course, we do want to recognize that really the medication, the purpose of it is to try to get us back to a more stable place. And it's not something I think any of us want to necessarily be dependent on that if we can help it. Because it's a way Dr. Crabb talked about it. He deals with mental health addictions. But it's kind of like if your battery goes dead, that, okay, it needs to be boosted. And so that happens sometimes. But if you're always having to boost it, then you realize, okay, something more is the problem. I need to see what else is the issue that's causing the battery to always go dead. And that's kind of the idea that, yes, sometimes a medication can kind of be that boost your system needs, but if it's always needed, then what other things need to be addressed? So we need to consider that. And of course, talking with your doctor about that is important, just to figure out what your options are. As well, reducing or eliminating the intake of caffeine and alcohol. That if you're dealing with anxiety, both caffeine and alcohol affect that, either with the use of it or the withdrawal from it. And so getting those two ingredients kind of out of your system can kind of help settle things down a bit. Well, developing better sleep patterns. A lot of times where, and it's kind of the challenge, is sort of, I'm anxious so I can't sleep, and then I can't sleep so I'm more anxious kind of thing. It's a bit of a cycle. And so sometimes it's, there's different ways of thinking, okay, I need to change my approach to bedtime. Maybe it's like, okay, don't go on don't surf the web for like right before bed, because that kind of stimulates me, right? Try to find something that's kind of boring to do that'll kind of, like, sometimes it's like, who knows, like maybe you could read an encyclopedia or something like that and doze off. I know even with an interesting book, me sometimes end up dozing off. So it's just different things like that. It's trying to put yourself in a better position so your system is not so depleted and it can have a chance to recover. Quitting smoking as well is something. Smoking always tends to have that effect that a lot of times I've known different people, because they're nervous They smoke to kind of settle themselves down, but then it becomes a dependency where they're always needing to do it. And so getting rid of that helps bring your system back into balance. Exercising, that it's actually, studies have shown, if you take a walk every day, that releases different endorphins and other things, and it's actually more effective than some different medications that you can take for relieving stress and just helping you to have a better frame of mind. Then reducing, eliminating sources of stress. If there's things in your life that you look at, okay, why is this in my life? Do I need to do all of these things that I'm doing? Is there something I can maybe pass on to someone else? Or is it something where sometimes it can be, okay, I need to take a day to catch up. And so that then I don't just have this whole burden of things that I'm trying to get done in time, that I have a chance to actually catch my breath a bit and then tackle them with a fresher mindset. And as well, developing supportive relationships, that there's people around us that can help us, that maybe we can call, maybe that we can spend time with, that a lot of times our tendency is to, when we're anxious, is to withdraw. And that's really the opposite of what we should do. It's where we try to engage. Is there someone that I can reach out to that can help me? And so it's valuable to do that. And we should be looking for that. That, yes, not everyone will be supportive. There's going to be some that don't understand you and don't seem to want to understand or help. But you keep looking, and a lot of times there are people out there if you look hard enough. But the thing is, though, is we realize with anxiety, we don't just want to manage our anxiety. We don't just want to reduce the symptoms. We want to deal with the core issues that have led to our anxiety. That it's kind of the thing. It's like we want to, as much as possible, we want to be free of it. It's been part of our life much longer than we wanted it to be. And so if we want to be able to evict it, if that's at all possible. And so we don't just want to have it kind of pay rent and just sort of be there, and kind of anytime we have a crisis, it just kind of comes to the fore again. We want it to be where it's gone and it's not going to bother us anymore. And so for our time this evening, what we're going to be doing is focusing on really four strategies on overcoming anxiety, and they kind of work together. So first we want to be identifying our anxiety triggers, what it is that usually sparks off our feelings of anxiety. Second, we want to evaluate and improve our coping skills. That how do we handle things more effectively. Thirdly, we want to look at changing our thought processes. Of just because it is a mental health issue, how do we start to think differently so that we'll react differently. And then finally, we want to find our true source of peace in life. All right. So, with identifying our anxiety triggers, it says anxiety becomes a more overwhelming part of our lives. We can seem to think that we no longer have any control over our emotions, that these things happen and we're at this point where we're just having essentially like a nervous breakdown, and we just need to kind of get away and just try to recover from what happened. And so when we get in that situation, we think, well, what can I do? This just has control. It keeps getting to me. And it seems I'm a prisoner to this. But we want to recognize that the first step to regaining control is to realize that there are things in our lives that we're reacting to in fear and anxiety. And those are our anxiety triggers. And the thing is, triggers can sometimes emerge just based on things that we see, things that we hear, things that we smell. That it triggers a memory, it causes us to think about something. I remember one time I woke up one morning and we had a wiener roast the night before, and I woke up one morning and I smelled smoke, and all of a sudden I thought, oh no, did I extinguish the fire? Maybe like our yard is on fire or something, and went out and it's like, oh no, everything's fine. But it just, you have those different things that just something happens and then it triggers a thought, and then you're already down that path where you're suffering from fear and anxiety. And sometimes it can be because it's reminding us of a previous negative experience. And that's especially for someone that has PTSD, is it's, you think of a soldier. I have one fellow that I went to school with that he served in Afghanistan on active duty, and he came back, and the first job he got was kind of being caretaker at the rink in town. But it was something that very quickly he said, I can't work here anymore. Because basically, when guys were shooting pucks and they would hit the boards, it would just bring him right back to being in Afghanistan. And so he actually works at the seniors lodge and does an awesome job. It's been a really good fit for him. But it just kind of, that's part of the thing, is that just that sound brings him back to that situation that he was in. And it's something to understand that it isn't like we're all the same, that each of us have different sets of triggers, we have different life experiences that we've had. And so we want to understand that after each episode of anxiety, we need to actually take some time to just kind of step back and think, okay, what happened? And what did I experience that set this off, that brought me to this place of anxiety? So there's quite a few different ones, and this probably is not going to be an exhaustive list by any stretch. But just different stresses that we have, that different news we might receive of health concerns, of financial concerns. I know this past week it was got a letter in the mail that someone that had paid me, it was an NSF check. And so as soon as you open up that, it's like, oh no. But then it was actually, it worked out just fine because I had enough money in the account to cover it. And then the guy, I'd let him know, and he gave me a new check the next day, and there was no problem. It was actually just a bank error. He had the money, but just something happened that they didn't recognize his check. But things like that happen, and we get this news, and then we're set off down this road where we're thinking, what's going to happen? And we're, it just, like, we're amazing at how quickly we can start to think of how bad things can get. And you almost wish we could go the other way and be as creative in how good things could be. But we never seem to go that way. It's always, this will happen, and this will happen, and this will happen. And it just, it becomes overwhelming. But when different stress happens, that's kind of the idea. It triggers that fight or flight response, and our body is starting to prepare us to deal with that. But because it's become such a part of us, instead of helping us to deal with it, it's actually disabling us from dealing with things. Conflict. And that's often something when we know that we have to talk to someone face to face about something that is uncomfortable or is not easy. or if there's someone that's difficult that we have to interact with. And sometimes it can be family. You're supposed to love them, you know that, but it's not always easy to interact with them. Sometimes it can be co-workers, that you just might have a co-worker, a boss that is just as always seems to know how to push your buttons, and just it makes you not even want to go to into work because of that individual there. Sometimes it can be social events that we're going to, whether, say, we have to speak in public in front of people, or we have to get up in front of a crowd. Sometimes we're in a situation where we don't know very many people at that event, and we have to try to mingle and make new acquaintances and try to have a good time when we're just worried, are these people looking at me, or what are they thinking of me? And there could be sometimes with that that you might see a person looking at you, and you might think, well, they're looking at me negatively, and the fact is sometimes they might be looking beyond you and you don't realize it. But there's situations like that that we realize, okay, this happened and this is how I responded, and this was the reason why. Sometimes it can be memories of negative or painful events that happened in our past that are brought up back to the fore, that we just start thinking of what happened previously, and especially for someone with PTSD, there's a lot of things that will just bring those memories up because they've been such burned into one's psyche that you just it's hard not to remember them. The objects of our fears or phobias, that say if you're afraid of heights, that as soon as you're up a certain height, then you start to get nervous. If you're afraid of spiders, that as soon as you see one, even though it's quite a distance away from you and hasn't noticed you, you've noticed it. And so there's different things like that where this is making me uneasy, and this is what I am struggling to deal with. And that can kind of go with the one above, is that sometimes we have had a bad experience when we were younger, and so then that thing becomes a fear to us. I know when I was young and not very bright, I sat on this log that was full of ants, and they crawled all over me and had to get them off and everything, and so for a while afterwards it was always something where, like any kind of bug or something that would crawl on me, I just would kind of freak out because it brought me back to that experience before. And of course it's having learned to overcome that. Sometimes it can actually be news media, that you read something or you watch something or listen to something, and it just, say a tragedy has occurred, or there's some kind of disease that's coming out, or just different things that happen, and we just start, our minds just start racing and thinking about what could happen, say if, especially if there's some kind of economic issue, we're thinking, how is this going to affect me? And we can really start to get into panic mode with some of that. And as we've looked at, sometimes we've got to realize is that they're trying to sell papers, trying to keep themselves alive, and so they have to sometimes appeal to people's fears in order to sell papers and stay in business. So learning to evaluate that is important. Idleness. Sometimes when we're just sitting around and have nothing to do and we're alone with our thoughts, that's when we can start worrying and thinking about what could happen. And that's kind of the thing again, is that instead of being engaged, our tendency is to withdraw and kind of isolate ourselves, but when we're in that place of idleness, that's when we really have our time for our mind to start going places that it doesn't need to go. And so learning sometimes to avoid that and find something positive to do, it can keep us from a lot of bad thinking. But then as well, clutter and uncleanliness, especially if we're thinking of, if you have kind of an obsessive compulsive disorder, that if you really like things in order and things are not in order, that you could have, well, it could be like, for instance, with my wife and I, that I could walk by something and say, well, it's a mess, but I don't have time to deal with it, and so I'll get to it whenever. Whereas with her, it's like, this is a mess, until this is cleaned up, it's just going to be very frustrating. And so that can be part of things. And I think that's, I know for me as a guy, kind of recognizing, oh yeah, maybe I should. It doesn't mean anything to me, but it might mean something more to my wife, to just kind of, okay, let's put that away, and so it's less stress and anxiety for her. Sometimes, of course, if you're concerned about germs and things, it's like if something's not kept to a certain level of cleanliness, then that can be very produce a lot of anxiety. And like I've known some people, when they go into a hospital, that basically every hand sanitizer station along the hallway, they're taking some from each one because they just want to make sure that they don't get whatever everyone else has that's in the hospital. And so there's different things like that, of just these worries and just taking stock and just thinking, okay, what is getting me so worked up? What am I worrying about? And then trying to pinpoint it and say, okay, this is what happened. This is what I saw, this is what I smelled, this is what I experienced. It brought up these thoughts, it brought up these memories, and that's how I went down this path into this place of anxiety and panic. But next thing is something important to understand, is that as we identify our individual triggers, we must realize that they're not the cause, but merely the catalyst of our anxiety. Because that's kind of the thing, is sometimes we have this thought that if this wasn't in my life, then my life would be fine. I wouldn't have anxiety. And it's the problem of this event that keeps cropping up, this person that I have in my life, this thing, and I can't help what I'm doing if this person just got out of my life, or if I moved away from this person, then that would solve my anxiety. But of course, we find that doesn't work. That we find a new person with a similar personality and we become anxious again. That it spurs it on, it's a catalyst, but it's not the cause. And we're not helpless victims to our triggers. And we want to realize that, because sometimes we can have the thought, and I know with one individual talked to, that it was kind of, she didn't want to go to public places because that was one of her triggers that set her off, kind of thing, being in crowds. But it's like, okay, well, that is something that eventually you want to learn to be able to do, to go into crowds and not be anxious. You can't stay away from them forever, right? And so the problem is that we have developed a habitual negative reaction to that trigger. And it's the way our mind works, that synapses or pathways develop. And the more we take our minds down that pathway, the stronger or the harder it is for us to get out of that pathway. It's just kind of a rut in our thinking. And what happens is we have to realize that I've developed this rut, that I start here and I'm already way down here before I have time to even think about what I'm doing. But that developed over time. And so that needs to be corrected. That needs to be identified as the issue, that there needs to be a different response than the response that I am giving. And that's the thing, to relieve our anxiety, our answers to often avoid our triggers at all costs. And yes, sometimes this is necessary. When we're dealing with anxiety, we're at a heightened anxious state, we need to maybe get away so we can calm down, so we can just kind of think things through, we can recover. We don't need to be continually exposed to that trigger again and again while we're still haven't got ourselves back to a place of peace. But we do want to realize it's both impractical and impossible to completely shield ourselves from all possible triggers. So it's kind of the thing, as we think of some of the different triggers, it's you watch the news and it makes you anxious. Does that mean you never watch the news? You're never informed of what's going on in life? Like that's probably not a wise thing to do, because there may be some things that you do need to be aware of. That there's different social settings that you're in. It's like, yes, you can avoid those, but as we looked at last week, you're going to be missing out on a lot of potential positive interactions that you could have, positive relationships that could be of benefit to you, friends that you're always thinking, well, these people are going to look at me negatively, they're going to judge me, but we could find it's someone that actually thinks that we're great and wants to get to know us. It maybe is struggling with much the same thing we are and can be a help to us. And so we want to realize that we can't shield ourselves from them forever. And so instead what we need to do is we need to prepare ourselves to face the inevitable encounter of our anxiety triggers. And so that's the thing of preparation. That the more prepared we are, the less anxiety we're going to have. And that brings us into our next thought, evaluating and improving our coping skills. And we can think of it in this way, say if you're in school, thinking back to the time when you were in school, and you had to take a test, that if you were not prepared for the test, you would be very anxious. That you were, how am I going to do? I'm not going to do well. I'm going to fail, and then I'm going to fail this class, and I'm not going to graduate, and then I'm going to be a dishwasher for the rest of my life. And you can go down this road, right? You can become very anxious because you're not prepared. But the more prepared you are, if you've studied, if you know the material, if you feel confident in your ability to tackle this test, then you don't have anxiety. And so it's the idea with that in life is that a lot of things we have, we need to look at them as tests. That I can't just kind of, it'd be the same thing as if like in school, I said, well, I'm just going to skip school and never show up again because I don't want to take that test and fail it. That it's like, we know we can't do that. That's not a good option. But sometimes with these other things in life, they're tests, and we need to look at it that way. We can't avoid them. We're going to have to take that test at some point, so we need to become prepared for them. And as we've looked at, much of our anxiety comes because we don't feel that we're adequately prepared to cope with upcoming negative events. That we look at what's coming, and we don't know how to handle it, we don't know what to do if that comes, and so we're trying to avoid it and think that hopefully we can get out of that if we can. But we want to realize is we may have this anxiety, this feeling of not being able to cope with these things because we've never been taught or never taken the time to learn effective coping skills. That maybe nobody ever showed us how to deal with things in life. Or maybe the examples we had in life showed us the wrong way. And that's the thing, is that sometimes we've never learned it, never been taught it. Sometimes what we have learned has been ineffective or counterproductive. And so we have to be aware of that and just kind of think, okay, what has happened? And it's kind of the thing is you think of someone that would be in the military that there's so much training that goes on. And sometimes for the recruits, they wonder, why are we doing this over and over and over again? This seems to be such a waste of time. But the whole purpose of it is to prepare them so that when they're in the battle, that they don't panic and think, what am I supposed to do, and run away, that their training takes over and they know, okay, this is what I do, I know what the plan is, and they follow that, and it saves their life. That if they panic, then that's pretty well going to guarantee that they're not going to make it out alive. And so there's that training that goes in, and of course, kind of the sad thing is, and it's because we haven't understand that a lot of them are trained to how to get through the battle and the firefight, but then there's no training, well, how do I process it afterwards? And that's what we're kind of learning more now is, okay, we actually need to have this time to kind of debrief, to process these things, to make sure that we're dealing with them properly. And it isn't just, well, we got to tough it out. Sometimes we just, okay, I need help. I need to deal with this in a different way than the way I'm dealing with it. And so it's wise to evaluate our current toolbox of coping skills to see which tools need to be removed and replaced. And I work as a carpenter, and I have, with my truck, I have it full of tools. And do I use all those tools every day? No. There's some that I don't use hardly at all. But it's kind of the thing, if you get into a situation where it's some kind of unexpected thing, that there's times where, okay, how am I going to deal with this? And you go looking for your tools, and if you have the right one, the fix can take just moments. But if you don't, then you're like, how do I make it work with the tools that I have? And it ends up taking way longer, and it makes you more anxious, because it's like, okay, I have to do this. I don't want to have to drive clear back to town to buy a tool to fix this. I want to try to do it with what I have. And so in life, it's kind of, we want to look at, okay, what do I have in my toolbox? How do I manage these things that happen in my life? Is there something that I have in here? Like, just imagine if I was to have like a broken hammer or like a bent screwdriver or something like that. Like, that's not going to be really effective. I need to replace that with something that works. And so that's what we need to find. We just say, okay, I've tried using this to fix this problem, and it doesn't work. So I need to discard that and replace it with something else that does work. And try to evaluate that. Because it's, if we keep trying to do the same thing over and over again, we're just going to get more and more frustrated and go around in circles. And so we want to recognize what are ineffective ways of coping with anxiety. And the first is avoidance. That it's the thing that anxiety triggers our fight or flight response. But so often there's no fight and it's all flight. It's get away, get as far away from this as I can. And stay away from it. And that's, well, we think this will solve the problem, but it's, what happens is we miss out on life when we do that. But as well, that personally it can be a withdrawal or isolation, that we're having these panic attacks, maybe we're feeling a bit embarrassed because of that, and that's contributing to more anxiety, and so we just think, I'm going to just be off by myself, and this will be better. But then what happens, we're alone, we're idle, our mind just starts working, and we get into a worse place. And it's just at those moments where we need to reach out to someone and say, oh yeah, I'm having trouble, can you maybe help talk me down so I'm not continuing on this line of thinking. Drug and alcohol use or abuse. I remember this one gentleman in a town where I grew up, that it was really kind of sad to see, because any kind of social event, you could tell when he showed up he was nervous. He was afraid that he would embarrass himself. So what did he do? He would have a couple drinks to kind of settle his nerves, make him feel like he was more capable. But what always happened was he would drink a little bit too much, and then he would embarrass himself. And then he would just, because he felt embarrassed, then he would drink more. And then just by the end of the night, he was just a mess. And it just, but we get into habits like that that can be very damaging. And sometimes we any time of pain or distress, sometimes we think, well, I just have to take a pill and that's going to fix it. And that doesn't always fix it. It's not usually the best option. And so we have to be very careful with that. That it's one thing if it's prescribed, but of course we'd always tend to self-medicate. And sometimes our self-medication may not be drugs or alcohol. It may be, say, we're having our comfort foods that we grab a hold of that maybe may not be helping us in different ways. Sometimes we can say, I'm going to go on a shopping spree, and that's going to give me some relief. But then we get the credit card bill, and that just adds to our anxiety. And so those are things that we can do that aren't good. And that, then again, there's the next one, kind of compulsive behavior, that we realize that there's something that I do to try to alleviate these feelings of anxiety. And we have to evaluate them. Okay, is this actually doing anything? Is this working? Someone that's worried about germs thinks, well, I'm going to always wash my hands and that's going to keep me safe. Well, not necessarily, because you could have your hands all washed and then somebody sneezes on you and you're hooped. And so you just, there's things like that that you have to realize, is this actually making a difference? Or is it just something I'm doing to try to convince myself that things are okay? Inactivity we talked about, that when we're inactive, that brings us to a place where we're alone with our thoughts, and that's not always a good place to be. When we get into negative thinking, where we start thinking, we get down that path of just how bad it could get, just things are never going to get better. We just start to get to a point of being kind of actually rolling from kind of anxiety to depression almost, back and forth, which can happen. Any other ways we can think of that we would say this is an ineffective way of coping with anxiety?
Well, do some people lash out at others?
Yeah.
Is that a defensive
mechanism? Yeah, that can be where somebody does something and it is making you anxious, so then you react. And we realize that that's going to kind of wreck your relationships with people over time. And so, yeah, that's, emotional outbursts would certainly be another one that we could say, yes, that's a way that I've coped with it. And it just, it's not working. It's actually pushing people away that could actually be a help to me. So yeah, those are different thoughts that we can have. So as we try to kind of both evaluate and improve our coping skills, we need to ask different questions. And so I hope these can be kind of a help to you, that you can ask and say, okay, are there ways that I can add some skills to my toolbox, make it so I'm more able to handle these things? And so first of all, what relaxation techniques could I learn or employ to help me calm down? That sometimes it's learning to just be able to stop for a minute and just breathe. And sometimes it's saying something to yourself over and over again to just try to bring yourself into a different state of mind. That there's things that you can do. Sometimes you can be taking a walk or maybe listening to some music that just is soothing. Sometimes there's things like that that we can use, and that's sometimes even with different music that we might have. Like sometimes it's almost, because we, with our MP3 players and iPods and stuff, sometimes we have our own playlist. Sometimes we almost need to have like, okay, this is my anxiety playlist, or this is like my I'm down playlist, that I listen to these songs and that helps me get into a better frame of mind. But that's something that we can use, and it can be very helpful to us. Then we think, well, what knowledge or skills can I develop that will make me better able to handle potential difficult situations? So say you feel awkward socially. Maybe I can learn kind of the art of the conversation. Maybe I can talk to somebody that I know that seems to be very confident socially, and I can just say, okay, what can I learn from you? What can you teach me? Sometimes there can be different things where you're concerned about taking a trip, about different things that can happen, and learning more about what you need to do, where maybe it's, okay, I need to actually practice changing a tire, so if I ever did get a flat, that I wouldn't be stranded somewhere. I know how to do this. Or I can kind of plan things out. I can, and sometimes even, say for instance, if you're on a trip, sometimes just learning how to use a GPS effectively can save anxiety when you're traveling. Because if you know how it works, then it can just direct you right where you want to be. And so there's different things we can learn. Just like if you're taking a test, it's like if you study for the test, you're going to be able to have a lot less anxiety when you face it. And so you just kind of look, okay, this test is coming in my life. This is something I'm not going to be able to avoid. How can I be prepared for it? And so finding ways that can help us that way. We may not have the skills now, but it doesn't mean we can't get them. We may not have the knowledge of what to do, but that doesn't mean that knowledge isn't out there. That we need to find it. Say, okay, if I'm in this situation, and that's kind of the funny thing. Sometimes you can just Google it. It's like, what do you do when this happens? And you'll have this like WikiHow of getting you through this situation. It gives you some ideas. And there's lots of things out there that we can search for if we're willing to do so. And then we can kind of think of what possible outcomes could occur, how can I prepare to deal with each potential outcome. That it's basically like running a simulation in your mind. And we touched on this briefly last week of Chris Hadfield when he was preparing to go up into space, that there was all these different simulations that they ran them through of every possible thing that could go wrong so that they would be prepared. And so it was kind of the thing. There were different times where things did go wrong when they were up on the space station. But they had this plan that is like, okay, I've got to kind of work my plan. I have to assess. I have to see what's the immediate danger, what is unnecessary to concern myself with right now. And a lot of times, because they had that training, then it wasn't a panic that they felt. It was this kind of, oh yeah, I can deal with this. This is manageable. I can find a way out of this. But then too, are there individuals or groups that I can seek support from as I approach the situation I'm anxious about? Can I have kind of a wingman that can go with me that will be able to kind of help me or just provide support? Sometimes it's just if you're going through something and you just say, someone you know, can you pray for me? And that can sometimes just be a help, that you know someone has your back, that can be helpful in that situation as you step into it. That it's worth looking for those supports, that you don't have to do it all alone. Now we want to get to the third thought, and that's changing our thought processes. Because the core issue in dealing with anxiety is realizing that its source lies in unhealthy thought processes that have developed over time. And so it's the thought. For us to change how we react, we have to change how we think. And that's how it works, is that the behavior changes as our thinking patterns change. And so we want to learn that. And we see in the Bible that it speaks of this idea of mind renewal. It speaks of that we can be transformed by the renewing of our minds. And today it's more commonly known as cognitive behavior therapy. And in that, it's the thought of where unhealthy thought processes and cognitive distortions, they're identified, and then they're replaced with new healthy thought processes that are based on the truth. And it's interesting, the actual Greek word of renewal in the Bible, the connotation it has is of a renovation. And it's kind of significant, because you kind of think of it, a couple years ago we had all that rain here in Kindersley in the summer, and most everyone had their basements flooded, right? And so when that happened, basically you had to get in there and vacuuming it all up and get it cleaned up and dried out, and then you think, okay, everything's fine. But then after a few months, you go down there and you feel like you can't breathe, and something just doesn't seem right. It's musty, there's a weird smell. And so then you have someone take a look, and they say, okay, well, what's happened is the water got on the drywall, it's all moldy, it's gotten into the insulation, the studs. There's a bunch of stuff that you need to rip out, and then we need to replace it with new stuff, because otherwise you're just going to keep getting sick. And we kind of think of that when we have different difficult situations in our life that come, it's like that. It's a flood to our mind. And we get through it, we clean up, but we don't realize is there's what's left behind is some thinking that's making us sick. And so what happens is we have to actually go into there and basically pull out the thinking that's making us sick and replace it with thinking that will make us healthy. And so it's a process that happens, but it's a necessary process. And we have to kind of realize that this, we have to identify, this is wrong thinking. And I need to find a new way of thinking, a new focus to my life. And so, too often, we get so focused on the object of our anxiety that leads to greater anxiety. And that's always kind of how it can be so counterproductive. When you try to not think about something, you can't help but think of it. And we can have this idea, I need to stop being anxious, I need to stop reacting to this, I need to... But because we're thinking about it all the time, we're not getting any victory, we're not overcoming it at all. And so what has to happen is it isn't something where we're thinking about it and we need to work on not thinking about it. We need to find something totally different to think about. It's like, where do I need to put my mind? On something productive? Is there something that I can grab hold of and that I can focus my mind upon that will be much more productive? And so trying to find that sometimes it can maybe just be maybe a hobby, or sometimes it can be like if there's some kind of thing you can say that can help you through different struggles like that, that it's trying to find that thing that you can fixate on rather than on the anxiety or the object of your anxiety. But as well, it's important to realize that our feelings of anxiety are not necessarily grounded in reality. That we're basically having our emotions control our thinking. And we have to sometimes step back and realize, wait a minute, am what I worried about, is that actually real? Is that actually going to happen? And so sometimes the threat is not real, it's only perceived. That we think that something terrible is going to happen, But then when we actually get in the situation, we find out, oh, I was worried about nothing. That sometimes it can be, say you have to basically confront someone about something, and you might be up all night worried about, okay, they're just going to blow their stack, and it's just going to be horrible. And then you summon up the courage to talk to them, you're like, oh yeah, that's right. And then you're like, why did I worry about that for so much? But that's what we do. And so we have to just kind of stop and think, wait a minute, is this actually going to happen and roll out the way that I think it's going to happen? Or is it different than that? And sometimes we can imagine, and this is what we're very good at, is a worst case scenario. And we have to ask, is this actually going to happen? And sometimes, sadly, that's our way of maybe coping, that we figure the worst, and then when it's not as bad, then it's like, oh, great, it wasn't as bad as I thought it could be. But that's, I don't think any of us want to live that way. That we, it's that idea, is that we need to start to think, okay, this could be what happened, but what else could happen? And maybe sometimes, let's imagine the best case scenario. And just kind of think, okay, this is worst case, this is best case, it's probably going to be somewhere in the middle. And so you kind of figure out, this is what is the more likely scenario that is going to occur. And as well, just because something bad has happened in the past does not mean that it's certain to happen again. And that's sometimes what we assume. When we've had a bad experience, things start to happen, and I think, oh, it's going back to that place again. But we need to just say, wait a minute, is it actually going there? That I'm in a different place, different time, different people around me. It's not going to happen the same. And that's the thing, we can have something bad that happened in the past, but it may actually never happen to us again. And so we have to be willing to admit that to ourselves. And sometimes we can be making a mountain out of a molehill, something that we think is a very, very big deal is actually not a big deal. That in our mind, it takes up our whole life. That if this doesn't happen, then everything's going to collapse. My life is going to be over. But then it's like, well, if this doesn't happen, today, like tomorrow's a new day, and say, sometimes it'd be like, I really want to get this job, and if I don't get this job, then what am I going to do? But then you find out you didn't get the job, but then the next day you get another offer, or another, you put in another resume and you get that job, and it ends up being way better than that other job ever would have been. And so we want to realize that different things we look at, if this doesn't happen, it's the end, and it's like, wait a minute, no, it could actually be the start of something, that this door closed and this other door opened, and it's worth going through and just realizing that what happened was not as big as I thought it was. And that's the thing, is that when we actually learn to face our fears, a lot of times what happens, we find that our anxiety was unwarranted, that we're worried about this future event. Our tendency is to want to avoid it. But when we actually step forward and we actually expose ourselves to that threat, then we actually find, wait a minute, this isn't a danger. And that's actually part of the idea of dealing with anxiety, is what they refer to as exposure therapy. That say if someone has a phobia to spiders, that in a controlled environment, that they'll let them see a spider, and then they'll let them get a little bit closer. And then sometimes it can be, like, and that's another idea of as we talk about with coping skills, sometimes if a person actually studies spiders and finds out, okay, there's only these many that are poisonous, I can identify these ones. All these others are harmless. Because like I've had some people that, it's like, it's a daddy long leg, squish it. And it's like, okay, that's not going to hurt you. It's not poisonous. It doesn't. It's not even actually a spider. It's just a cousin of a spider. But it's different things like that. It's just where and that's kind of, there's a principle that Jesus spoke of, is that you shall know the truth and the truth shall make you free. And that applies to a lot of different things, but it especially applies to anxiety, that sometimes our fear is based on something that's not true. And when we actually have it confronted with reality, confronted with the truth, then we find, wait a minute, this is not the great danger that I thought it was, and that fear loses its power. I don't have to be afraid of this anymore. I found it to just be this, it's kind of like as a child, where you have this thought of the boogeyman in the closet. And then you get to a certain point where you realize, wait a minute, I open up my closet, or I look under my bed, there's nothing there. And I don't have to be scared. And just learning that, and that comes with a lot of different things in life. And instead of being overwhelmed with everything that may happen in the future, it's wiser and healthier to focus on living one day at a time and dealing with challenges as they come. That it's the thing is that we can't really deal with the things that are happening a week from now, a month from now, a year from now, today. We can maybe prepare ourselves in different ways for them, but we have to deal with what's going on today. And I remember when we were working at the smelter, that it was getting close to the end of the week, and there was sort of some rumblings of maybe there being some layoffs because the job was getting kind of slow. And I remember this one fellow that he was just really worried, and it was like, well, okay, what am I going to do? We've got these bills that are coming up. And I was like, okay, you don't even know if you're going to get laid off. Just take it as it comes. And it's like you're going to have a paycheck right now. See, like, you can probably apply for EI, but maybe see if you can get another job. Like, there's different things. But it's just like, take it as it comes. Don't try to carry everything at once. And just try to carry, like, several months and years of worries when you only have 24 hours in the present day to deal with it. And this was something else that Jesus spoke of, where he said, "No, take therefore no thought for the morrow shall take thought for the things of itself. Sufficient unto the day is the evil thereof." And really, we can think of it that way. There's enough to concern ourselves with in today that we have to learn, okay, that's tomorrow, I'm going to deal with that tomorrow. I have to deal with what I need to deal with today. And if we try to break it up into more manageable chunks like that, it doesn't become such a weight of anxiety upon us. We just say, okay, I'll tackle this first. And it is kind of like with, say, if like when you're taking your final exams in grade 12, it isn't like you had to take all the tests on the same day. It's like, okay, I got this test to do today, this test to do tomorrow, and I'm just going to do it one at a time and just see what I can do. And so we want to recognize that. And so that brings us then to final thought, which is finding our true source of peace. Because that's where we want to end up, is a place of peace. That when something has come into our life, it's filled us with fear and anxiety, and we can't get back to that place of peace. And so we want to actually realize there is a place we can go to, and not just a place, but a person that we can go to find peace. And so when we have suffered from anxiety, our greatest desire is to find peace. And God is the God of peace, so as we seek Him, we can find the peace that we seek. And someone has made this statement: there's no Jesus, no peace. But if we know Jesus, then we can know peace. And when we have a relationship with Him, who is the God of peace, then we can understand it and experience of that desire. And so there's many different ways that we can recognize this. First of all, that when we first come to salvation in Christ through repentance and faith, that some of what are our strongest sources of anxiety can be resolved. That we're afraid of death. We're afraid of what's going to happen after the grave. Am I going to go to heaven? Am I going to go to hell? And if we trust in Him as Savior, we can have that assurance that that's secure. That as well, that a lot of times we can burden down by guilt and shame of things that we've done, and we think, well, what's going to happen to me because of this? What are people going to think of me? But when we come to the Lord, that's washed away. And He talks about it's going to be remembered no more. I've cast it behind my back. It's under my blood. It's forgiven. And we're free of that. And so when we come to Him, that's resolved. And so this, these are words of Jesus. He said, "He that heareth my words and believeth on Him that sent me hath everlasting life, and shall not come into condemnation, but is passed from death unto life." That's a thought that when we believe in Him, it isn't something that maybe one day I will have everlasting life if I don't mess something up. It's the idea that no, I have it now. I'm not going to come into condemnation. I'm passed from death to life. And so living a life where we know that our eternity is settled, knowing that we've been forgiven, that takes a big weight of anxiety off of our shoulders. And that's really where we start in finding peace. But then as well, and that's the thing, is that too often we focus on our fear and our anxiety, but we need to find something else to focus it on. So if we focus on God rather than our fears, and we choose faith over fear, that helps us to remain in a peaceful state of mind. Isaiah 26:3 says, "Thou wilt keep him in perfect peace, whose mind is stayed on thee, because he trusteth in thee." And so if we're able to keep our minds on the Lord, then that helps us to have peace, because we kind of realize, okay, this is overwhelming to me, but it's not overwhelming to Him. That He's bigger than all of this. He knew it was coming. And there's even verses where we recognize that there's no temptation or trial that's going to be above what we're able to handle. That God always makes sure that there's a way of escape, that we can bear that trial that we go through. That we can have that assurance that He's looking after things. And I know we actually got a little picture on our trip, and just got three words on it. It's God's got this. And it's something I think it's good to remember, that with all the challenges of life, just remembering that he has things looked after. But as well, and this can be a very effective coping skill that we can employ. Meditating on portions of Scripture can be very effective in helping us to calm down. And these are the ones that I have listed here, ones that I actually have used different times when I'm in a state where I'm getting worried or anxious. I will repeat these, and they can be a help to me. First, I think we're all fairly familiar with, from the 23rd Psalm, "Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. For Thou art with me, Thy rod and Thy staff, they comfort me." That we can be in a bad situation, but we don't need to be afraid, because God is with us. And it's kind of, you think of it with a little child that has a bad dream, that they wake up, and what do? They run into mommy and daddy's room, and they snuggle with their parents. And they might have been totally frightened, but the fact that they're close to mom and dad, they feel safe. And so it's the same way with God, is that when we get scared, we run to Him, and He helps us to feel safe. And so I'm close to Him, and so I know I don't need to be afraid. And we just kind of think He's so big, He can deal with whatever my problems are. I don't have to be afraid. This one especially is one I get back to a lot God is our refuge and strength, the very present help in trouble. Therefore, we will not fear, though the earth be removed and though the mountains be carried in the midst of the sea. That He isn't someone that's far away from us, and that we have to, like, basically send a letter of request, and it might take 2 or 3 months to get through the bureaucracy of heaven before He'll actually come across His desk. He's a very present help. And so at a moment that we need Him, He is there. And so we don't have to be afraid, even though everything around us seems to be falling apart, that He's with us and He's going to help us through. And this sometimes is when we're having trouble getting to sleep. Sometimes we're worried about something. This is a verse we can repeat and meditate on. I will both lay me down in peace and sleep, for Thou only makest me dwell in safety. That we can have that feeling with Him. But as well, in giving our cares to God in prayer, we can find relief from our anxiety. And that's really one of the chief coping skills we want to develop, is when we have worries, we have anxieties, we don't just worry about it and stew over it, we pray about it and we give it to the Lord in prayer. And this is a verse very important with this thought, and it starts out, be careful for nothing, and that idea of careful is the idea of being full of care. That the Greek word actually speaks more of the idea of being anxious. And that we're not to be anxious about anything in life, but instead is that we're to, in everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known unto God, that we give it to God in prayer. And then the peace of God, which passeth all understanding, shall keep your hearts and minds through Christ Jesus. That's what we find, that we can worry and just stir ourselves up into a place of greater and greater anxiety, or we can pray and it brings us to this place of peace. Well, even though the problem has not resolved itself yet and may not resolve itself for the immediate future, yet we're at peace. And that the Lord has just kind of said, I've got this, it's going to be okay, and you don't have to worry about it. And another verse too, casting all your care upon Him, for He careth for you. And that's what we're learning to do, that whatever care, whatever anxiety we have, that we have a choice. Either I can worry about it, or I can let God worry about it. And He says, I've got broad shoulders, give it to me, I'm glad to carry this for you. You don't have to be burdened down by this. And so learning to do that we're not going to dwell upon that, that we're instead, okay, I'm going to give it to the Lord, and He's going to take care of this. Because that's the thing, is that we have so very little control over the future and over events. And but doesn't it make sense to put things into someone who is in control of events and can kind of guide things and make things come about? It's much, much better that way. And so with all of this, as we've gone through this, I want you to really recognize that this isn't just kind of textbook ideas, that these are things that are very practical that you can use. And just want to relate an experience with us that happened. And we went on this trip. We took a trailer, headed all the way down to Georgia, and then came all the way back. And of course, never actually have I pulled a trailer before, and so that was a new experience. And certainly, driving the interstates is not something that I'm used to. And so, as we're going down, that especially as big trucks go by, that we feel the trailers start to kind of shift, and you'd have to correct it. And we had like the sway braces on it, but still, especially when it was windy, it would shake a bit. But we're trying to not be nervous, trying to relax, just kind of enjoy our trip. But then, as we were in Illinois, we're actually just an hour away from Malia's aunt's, and we came on the interstate where we had, it was instead of just being able to stay in the slow lane and turn off to the right, the interstate was a big Y ahead of us, and we had to go to the left. And so we got out of the slow lane, and we're in the middle lane, and just waiting for the time, and it was just coming up. But then what happened is two big trucks went by us right at the same time. It was a windy day, and so basically we got into this wind tunnel, and the trailer started going back and forth, and I couldn't hold it, and we actually made contact against the truck on the right. And as you can see on our vehicle, as you go out, we kind of bent the bumper and kind of knocked off the mirror and scuffed up the side with the tire, and like, it was a very kind of frightening experience, and so part of us, or part of me, I know, was like, maybe we should just turn around and go home, kind of thing, right? Because it just, I don't want to go down this road anymore. And so we made it further on, because we're really only halfway. And so we got down to Georgia, but we're still having times where it really was shaking, say if we had some come by when it was windy, and so we're really nervous. And so finally got to Georgia, and we're going to be there for 10 days, so we're actually a week. Okay, don't have to be on the road pulling a trailer anymore. But then, of course, there's thinking of, okay, eventually I have to hook up that trailer again and take it back to Canada. And part of it, we're even thinking, well, maybe we should just sell the trailer and then just drive up without it. But as some was worried about, and as it got closer, became kind of more concerned about it. But it was something that really, as got towards that day, I started just kind of like thinking and asking and finding out different things and realizing, okay, there's different things. Like, I found a way that I could actually tighten the sway braces to make them even more snug than they were. And then talking with my dad, he mentioned that if you're loading the trailer, not to have anything behind the wheels of any weight, because that can tend to make you sway. Put it in front of the wheels, makes it more stable. And then got thinking, as well, if the thing's shaking like this, usually what I would do is I'd put my foot off the brake to try to thinking that would settle it down, whereas actually maybe putting my foot on the gas a little bit would actually help me snap out of it quicker. And so different things of learning, okay, this is a way to develop a skill, get some knowledge. But then as well, that night that I spent quite a bit of time the night before in prayer, just, Lord, I'm nervous, can you just give me some confidence? And it was the things that he gave me a peace, so that then it wasn't something where I was all nervous about going. I was actually excited. Okay, God's going to protect us, we're going to make it through. And so we went, and it ended up being quite a bit better with those different changes I made. It didn't sway as much, and we were taking a different route that kind of, because we basically went quite a ways east, getting into the really busy parts of the U.S., where on the way back we went through Alabama and Mississippi and over to Oklahoma and up, where it was not as busy. And so it's kind of the thing, is that we can be in an anxious situation, but there's a way to process ourselves through it and prepare ourselves. And as we seek the Lord in prayer, He can give us that strength so that we can overcome these things. So, as we conclude, we want to recognize there is both hope and help in finding relief from anxiety. It isn't something where we want to look at it as this kind of chronic, incurable illness that we can never, ever, ever find any relief from. That we can get help and we can find relief from. And it does take time, but it's as we learn to challenge and change our thinking, we can come to a place in our lives where instead of being constantly triggered into negative reactions, we can process our situation, we can deal with its challenges as needed, and we can return to a place of calm and peace. And sometimes it's something where we realize we need help. Maybe we need someone to kind of be kind of a coach to us that can kind of maybe ask us some of these questions that we've had here. Say, okay, how did I react? What was my trigger? What kind of coping skill can I, how can I deal with this in a better way than I have been dealing with it? And then have someone just even encourage you, okay, well, let's actually try this and see how it goes and find out it's not as bad as we think it is. And that, that can help us to be in a place of peace. And it's understanding what courage is. Courage is not the absence of fear and anxiety. But instead what courage is, it's the choice that we make to not allow our fear and anxiety cripple us and disable us. It's instead we move forward to do what is needed. I was actually visiting a friend, and the kids were having horse rides with one of his horses, and in his tack room in his barn, he had a thing from John Wayne. It's like, courage is being scared to death but saddling up anyways. And that's kind of the thing. That's what we have to realize, is that my fear and anxiety, I don't want it to cripple me anymore. That I want to actually learn to move forward and confront my fears and realize that, wait a minute, I can get through this. And it may not be in my own strength, it may be with help of others, it may be, and so often it's with the Lord's help, that we say, yes, I can go through this. And this is a quote by John Anderson, his pastor down in Georgia. But I thought it was really a lot of wisdom to it. Depression comes from living in the past. Anxiety comes from living in the future. And peace only comes from living in the present with the knowledge of the risen Christ in the midst. And so we're to live today by practicing the presence of Jesus Christ in every moment and situation. If we recognize that He is with us, we don't need to fear any evil. That He's going to protect us. And so it's the thought that we want to learn to live in the present and learn to live in the presence of God. And when we do that, we can live in peace, because we know that He's with us and He can help us to handle whatever life may bring. And it says in Philippians 4:13, I can do all things through Christ which strengtheneth me. That this may be difficult, it may be very challenging to me, but if God's with me, He can strengthen me, and I can do this. I can get through this, and I'll find out that it was worth going through, and that I would have missed a great deal if I had kept kind of in my safe space and not tried anything. All right. So, any thoughts or questions as we conclude?
I think it's a lot of it is mindsets that we've learned through our life. We come to wrong conclusions, and those conclusions kind of have to be challenged.
Yes. Yeah, and that's like it's developing just kind of critical thinking skills, and sometimes just thinking, wait a minute, in what I'm observing as being the norm, is this actually correct? It's kind of that, like with Chicken Little, like the sky is falling, it hit me on the head, and just, okay, well, let's actually go back and assess what actually hits you and decide. But none of them did that. It's just, oh, we all need to run and tell the king, right? And it's, there's a lot of things that maybe we grow up with, that we see pattern, that we follow that pattern. And yeah, many things that we've assumed that thinking is correct, and it might be years later we find, wait a minute, that thinking was entirely faulty. It wasn't based on reality. It was going in a completely wrong and unhealthy direction. Any other thoughts?
I like that one, the opposite of curious thing.
Yeah. Well, that's like you think of Jesus when they were in the Sea of Galilee and the storm came up and He was asleep, and He calmed the storm, and they were like, because they were Pastor, why don't you care about us? We're going to perish. We're going to drown, and you're just sleeping. But he said, why are you so fearful? How is it you have no faith? And it's kind of, it's one or the other. It's like we have to trust in something, and God is there for us to trust in. That if we trust in him, then he's bigger than our fears, and they don't have to have that power over us anymore. All right, any other thoughts? All right.